And we will begin with the Sufi invocation of Pir Murshid Inayat Khan. Towards the One, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. Take the breath from the mandala of the mouth, blow it into the hands. The blessings of all the times this prayer has been said throughout the world since its transmission, and take that blessing into oneself. We'll be talking about gathering the fuel, and this is the one of the ways we can do that. We can tune to the vibration of these prayers. Every soul that has said them, Murshid himself that recited them, we tune and bring that vibration into ourselves. So this is part three of clearing the dust and polishing the lamp. And I'm going to review, because it's been some months since we've actually focused on this material. And I think even though we know it may sound new and fresh again, but it'll be a good way to kind of jumpstart us as we go forward. There was a bowl of sake that came up this week, and I thought it was really beautiful, and it related, in a sense, to this, to what we're seeking and what we're studying here. And it says, love brought us from the world of unity to that of variety. And the same force can take us back again to the world of unity from the world of variety. I've heard it said many, many, many times that God wanted to know him, herself, and thereby created this world of variety as a way of knowing or self-knowing. And our interest in the world draws us into the world, but part of our practice is being in the world, interested in the world, but not caught by the world. And so, again, we're interested in this world of variety, but the search is always for unity. I mean, if you're here, you know that. If you're on the path of Sufism, you know that, you feel that. We're looking for that union. And we are fortunate to have this path, because we know so many people, if we just look around or listen to the news, that are seeking something in all kinds of materialistic and power ways. And we have these methods and these teachings that can take us inward to that essence of love and unity. So in review, I'd like to read some passages from the Gathas. And this again has to do with clearing the dust and polishing the lamp. The heart is the principal center, not the heart in the body, but the heart which is the depth of mind. For the mind is the surface of heart. The mind is the surface of heart. The heart and the mind are as one tree. The heart is the root, and the branches and the fruits and the flowers and the leaves represent the mind. Now we pause here and we think about this. If the heart is the root, and Murshid is likening it to a tree, we know that that unseen world of the roots, we know this in a physical sense. Dana knows this, and Nur Latifa knows this. Dana's Nur Latifa's husband. They're gardeners in a big way. You know that the soil has to be prepared. It has to be turned. It has to be fertilized. It has to be rotated. It has to be tended to. And in the same way, that heart space must be tended to. Because what arises from that begins to be a production of mind, And the mind interprets this external world in certain ways based on that. So we want to, again, we're clearing the dust and polishing the lamp. Back to Murshid's words. The heart is at the bottom of thought, imagination, and all. Feelings belong to the heart, thought to the mind. So there's this subtlety. Again, we could think about gardening. It's maybe a Zarat metaphor. So we plant something and it remains in the dark. And we nurture it with water and light. The water can be our practices, and the light can be the light of the practices and the light of the vibration. And then something starts to emerge. In this way, also things emerge from feelings into the mind. If we're not careful, we're not mindful about it, these feelings can get away from us, and they can produce impressions on the mind that can be not so helpful or healthy. They can hurt us, in fact, and they can hurt others. So we're wanting to look at this more deeply. And this whole class is going to be dedicated to this cosmology. Okay. Murshid goes on to say, plainly speaking, the depth of the heart and the surface, the depth of mind is heart. So he keeps going over this and over again. The depth of the mind is heart. So what's beneath it? And the surface of the heart is the mind. Mind is a receptacle of all to which it is exposed. Mind is a receptacle of all of that which is exposed. It's like a photographic plate. And therefore, all conditions, happy or unhappy, all actions, good or bad, all that is beautiful or void of beauty, become impressed upon the mind. Now, Murshid talks about this in other parts of the teachings. He talks about it like here he's talking about it as a photograph, but he also talks about it as a record. Those grooves, you know, habitual thought patterns, self-talk can be part of that. It's an impression that remains. And sometimes those impressions are wonderful and beautiful, but sometimes they can be harmful to us. We know that. We can sometimes have habitual thoughts that we wish we could sort of eliminate or transform into something else. So here now, Murshid's giving us some teachings on this. So Murshid talks again about its first impression is on the surface. And as the surface or the impression is retained in the mind, it reaches the depth of the heart. So both ways there's communication, from the internal to the external, outward, and the outward to the inward. So think about that juxtaposition and communication between the two. And Murshid says again, it's like a photographic plate. Once it's developed, the impression becomes clear and deeply engraved. Well, I think what we all want to have clear and deeply engraved on our hearts is God, presence, love, harmony, beauty. But there are other things that arise. And that's natural. It's part of the stress of our everyday life and complications that can arise in relationships and challenges. But that's also so beautiful, because that's the very thing that can drive us deeply into our practices. I remember at one point, it was probably in the 80s, I was involved with the Native American tradition as well as the Sufi tradition. But I was doing, I knew it was a time of transformation for me. I just knew it. I knew that the old ways of thinking had to change. I had to break down some boundaries and barriers. So I threw myself into weekly sweat lodges. And one of the things that's often said there is, of course, it becomes very hot, it becomes very uncomfortable, but the teachers always said, if you're suffering, pray harder. There's another way of saying it. When suffering arises, confusion arises, complications arise, you know, whatever those negative emotions might be there, we need to pray harder. It's saying, it's tapping us. They could be our meditation companions, all those things. So let's do a brief practice here. Again, as we began this session, we're going to breathe into the heart. And you might almost think about that using the metaphor of preparing the soil. You could be looking into the surface of the heart. And maybe there's some little weeds or little stickers there, things that are in the way. We can gently remove them, and we use the breath. And we can just imagine that we're releasing that energy. Any tension, anything that feels uncomfortable. And the object is to sort of clear the soil, the ground of the heart. And what we bring into that is richness and the capacity to feel deeply and to also be able to transform negative feelings, knowing that they, in their essence, are energy. And we can use that energy for good, for our own fuel, for transformation, for metamorphosis, for wisdom, to deepen understanding. And I'd like to introduce a practice here. We may have mentioned it in the past, but I know it's not one we've done together. But it's a beautiful practice. It's often done as part of the forgiveness cluster of sacred names, but we're going to work with it individually here. And this practice, the sacred name is Afu. Afu, A-F-U-W, Afu. Afu is, I would say, it's simply, it's like the divine presence that pardons, the divine presence that clears away, sins or indiscretions. It's the divine quality that understands and has compassion for our limitations. And with this quality, it's often said that, and I love this metaphor, is that it's like the breath or the wind blowing. We could say it's the breath or the wind that blows across the heart, but we could also say it could be the visualization you could use is like, and you've seen those pictures. I've seen it in reality because I live there in the dead quarter of the Sahara, but the wind's moving and shifting all impressions. Or like a blackboard, when you have all this stuff written on it and you take cloth and you just wipe it clean. That could be a Fu also. So we're clarifying and we're revivifying and we're using the breath with a Fu, a Fu. And let that breath continue. And you're blowing away the impressions. Okay, shall we try it together? The first 34 recitations we'll say with Ya, Ya Afu. And the next 34 will be whispering, just Afu. And then the last will be just breathing. Just let that breath soothe the heart so that we can re-script, we can transform, we can heal, we can be renewed. And so we begin with, we'll do the first 11 rather slow and deliberate, and we'll speed up as we go. Ya Afu. And you can even move your head from left to right, the left being the individuated self or that world of variety where we exist, and crossing, sweeping the heart to that unitive self, the ultimate, the absolute. And it's, we're kind of reuniting those two parts, and then we return again. So, Ya-afu, 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 Ya-afu. Now we quicken. Ya-afu, 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 Ya-afu. And now whispering, afu, 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 afu. Silent on the breath. Ya-afu. Does anyone have any questions or comments or experience? You feel free to share at this time. You can deepen the experience for oneself and others. If you wish to share anything, feel free to unmute and share it and then mute again.
I was going to share it, Smi Latifa, just to sort of had the image of the soil, and as the soil things break down and then they get, the roots get finer and finer. And afu is just like at the moment where the very finest little roots dissolve. And it was so beautiful.
Beautiful, a beautiful experience and a beautiful visual metaphor. Thank you.
Beloved Murshida and those gathered, the what arose in this heart was the teaching of spiritual healing is like detoxification. Things have to come up to be released. Once we have asked to be healed, then our unhealed places arise to the surface.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Halima. Did anyone feel sort of an opening and expansion in the heart? Kind of deepening, maybe?
What I experienced, Nuria, is kind of, I was visualizing a lot of what Nur Latifah was visualizing, but I saw those tiny roots as just different things that had occurred in my life that were either good or bad, that were enriching the soil of my heart.
Beautiful. That's it. That's exactly right. Good or bad, they can all be enriching. Beautiful. Okay. We'll take this practice and continue to work with it and explore it and see what happens as you sort of rest into it and use it. Use it like medicine when you need to, when something comes up. You know, just take it in. Take a tincture of a foo, okay? And we're gonna move on now, if it's okay. Does anyone else have anything? I wanna read something, and then after I read it, I'm gonna go through it again with a visual. I've made some visuals because I think it helps us to see things differently. And these are again words of Murshid, and he taught, it's such an interesting cosmology, and there are words that are used. They sound simple in their essence. We use them a lot. Sometimes we even use them interchangeably. And people ask me questions about these words. And so when you listen to this next bit of teaching, you'll hear Murshid, and it sounds like it's going in a kind of circle. So let's listen to it. Let's think about it. And then we'll look at this visual and go through it again. So Murshid says, the soul itself is no other than consciousness, which is all pervading. Consciousness, which is all pervading. But when the consciousness is caught in limitation through being surrounded with the elements, in that state of captivity, it's called soul. Right, so now this has made me think, I asked that question at the beginning, I'll ask it again here and people can write me, you know, that what's our next steps? I mean, we have a little ways to continue with this theme, but do we want to switch to another theme or just keep evolving topically? But it makes me think that we really may want to go next into the elements more deeply. I've touched on it even throughout this year, but that same consciousness is caught in limitation through being surrounded by elements. In that state of captivity, it is called soul. So the consciousness is all pervading, but the soul, when it's caught in the elements, or when that consciousness is caught in the elements, it becomes soul. Interesting to contemplate that, to see how that happens and understand it, consciously understand it. I just flit in here, so I feel like I should say it. Murshid Hidayat would talk in that last passage that we were talking about the heart and the mind. There's something that he's written in A Message in Our Time, and maybe Amina, I know you translated that into Italian, you might be able to help me here, but he talks about the mind being a storehouse, kind of like Merchant was referring to it as a photographic record, or a photograph, or a record, and how when we go into that storeroom, there are so many things that, I mean, hello, it's like you store it, you know, there's so much stuff that we store, whether or not we need all of it. You know, we do hang on to things. I mean, there's another metaphor. These huge storage capacities all over the, probably all over the world, but certainly we know all over our country, we have huge storage units. I don't know, do you have them in Italy? But I'm telling you, we don't need all those things. And so we're talking about being selective, clarifying, transforming, using the good and the bad for our realization. That's important. And deciding what we don't need anymore, what's excess baggage, as they would use in pop, you know, psychology terms. You know, what's the baggage that we don't need? So let's think about that. And that might be a good passage. If I can find that, I'll attach it as a PDF, that passage from Murshid Hidayat's writings, to maybe help, because it kept coming in and I feel like I should share things when they keep coming in like that. Okay. So the soul itself is no other than consciousness, which is all pervading, but it becomes limited when it gets captivated through the elements. Then the next point is the heart of a person is like a globe over the light of the soul. When the globe is dusty, naturally the light is dim. And you can see that. That's something that is certainly subtle, but we start to see that when in the countenance of people. You can tell when there's a heaviness there or a weight. Maybe even the complexion changes colors in some way. So we want to be mindful of that and notice ourselves too. When that feels like it needs a good polishing, so to speak. Aladdin's lamp, what comes out of it? Something amazing. When it's cleaned, when this globe on the lamp of the heart is cleaned, the light increases. In fact, the light is always the same. It's the globe which is not clear. As every light needs fuel, so does the light, and Murshid put capital L, which is ours, which is ourself, needs fuel also. I mean, the body needs fuel. We feed it, we exercise it. But how do we do this for our inner light? Well, Murshid talks about this next. We learn in Sufism that mysticism which teaches us how to collect the fuel, which is necessary not only for the body, but for the mind and the soul. By concentration, by meditation, and by all other ways of contemplative practices. The purpose accomplished by the Sufi is that purpose which is the longing of every soul. So a little bit of time, quiet time, reserved time. I was reading something about finance and about how important it is to save. His name could be said here. They said, when you're planning a budget, always plan to pay yourself first. Put a little away. That's your first payment. Well, same could go for this. When you're thinking of your day, first thing you budget for is a little bit of quiet time. I know how difficult that can be. I do. Life has changed, so I have a little bit more. But there were times where I was juggling so many balls I didn't know. But one of those balls had to be practice. And because I had that ball in the mix, it helped me do everything else. So doesn't need to be a huge amount of time. if you're a good meditator and practitioner, it can be very quick. And once you do that, you can learn to make those transitions quickly too. But it's good to practice, 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 and give fuel to yourself. It gives you an anchor. It fuels you. It gives perspective throughout the day. I think I'm probably lecturing to the choir, because I'm sure all of you do this. Now, I'm going to share my screen, and it might take me a moment to flip back and forth and make sure we have the right images up. Give me just a moment. See if we can make this work. Ah, there it is. Okay, we're going to go back. Hold on just a moment. So this is, I made this these concentric circles to kind of show us, I hope you all can see it. I purposefully made the inner circle going out more and more dark in color, but the inner circle is consciousness. This all-pervading presence that Merchant talked about. And he said, encircling that is the soul. And the soul gets, let's go back, I'm going to go to the notes, which are now down here. The soul is no other than consciousness. But we hear those terms, soul and consciousness, commingle, especially those of us that are also on the path of Buddhism. You know, consciousness in Buddhism is, soul isn't a term that's used, but consciousness is often used in place of it. So here, this, I hope this makes it clear that consciousness is at the core. We could also reverse this. Consciousness could be in the outside circle. It could be all pervading, and we could work concentrically inward. So you can flip that in your mind if it works, whatever works for you. So again, the soul itself is no other than consciousness. But when this consciousness is caught in limitation through being surrounded by the elements, that state is called soul. And then Merchant says, again, the heart of a person is like a globe over the light of the soul. So here you see it, it's the next circle. And when the globe is dusty, naturally the light is dim. So we can see that, how that soul, if we think about it, heart, in terms of elements, it's a transitional element, just like fire is a transitional element. So anyway, think about that. So now the heart is something that's more present and more developed within our being, we could say. When it's cleaned, the light increases. And again, in fact, the light is always the same. But the globe becomes dusty. And naturally, then the light becomes dim. Can you see this, everybody, by the way? Okay. I hope so. So then, Murshid, again, I'm going to just remind us that in Sufi mysticism, we learn how to gather the light. And the way we do that is through our practices, which are such an amazing gift. Extraordinary. Beautiful. Murshid says, the heart is the bottom of thought. The heart is the bottom of thought, imagination and all. Feelings always belong to the heart. Feelings belong to the heart, and thought belongs to the mind. So now you see again, we're going to that next level. The feelings can arise and become part of the mind realm. He says, the mind is the surface of the heart. So this is in a way why I made these concentric circles going outward. He says, what belongs to the mind can be expressed in words. What belongs to the heart cannot be expressed. So you see this dynamic between feelings that need to arise to the surface of mind, and then they come into expression. He says, everything in the mind is intelligible. But what is intelligible is but not expressible. That belongs to the heart. I think it's interesting because we know that there are some things that do require the mind, but really are more expressions of the heart. For example, there are things that can be expressed in music, these incredible feelings from the vibrations and dancing and swirling of sounds together that can't really be put into words. I think we've all experienced that. Also, there's some things that we see in a beautiful piece of stained glass or a beautiful painting or a beautiful piece of architecture. That's a matter of heart that emerges through the mind and is given form, but it speaks to us in different ways than words. Words aren't always so reliable. We use them, but they mean many things to people. So I want to show you another slide here because it relates. Now you see, again, most of you have seen a stupa, and this also has these different layers. You start to see now the unity of religious ideals because we could count them. They're the same. And when you go inside a stupa, it's space, that's consciousness. This outward form encapsulates it. It's like this sacred void in a sense. And now I have one more slide where now you see where it relates to the Buddha's body, our body. So,
Astaghfirullah, Nuria. You need to quit sharing and share again for people to see your other slides.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'll go back then. Well, I don't know what's going on. Okay. All right. Do you see that now? Okay. So here we have the stupa related to the diagram. And also, those of you, I know all of you have seen them, is the mandalas. The mandalas is only a two-dimensional form of a three-dimensional universe. So when you look at those flat, beautiful sand paintings or Tonka paintings of a mandala, you will see when it becomes in three dimension, it becomes a whole universe, or like a stupa, becomes a representation of that. I'm going to flip to this next slide. Let's see what happens. Did it work? Did it work? Can you see it? Okay. So now you see it, all three examples. This is a site in Bangkok, Thailand, where there's the stupa and the Buddha. But again, you see that, you know, consciousness, soul, mind, consciousness, soul, mind, heart, body. It starts to become part of that articulation of those concepts. Does that make sense? Is it helpful at all to see it in this way? Nurlatifa? Okay. You're concentrated. I wanted to be sure I was getting through. Amin and Paran? Okay, good. So let's again, we can look at upon these images. Sometimes it's helpful. You know, Murshid gave the practice of the dot in the circle. It's a teaching in the Gathas that helps us see that finite point of creation in unity, unity in God, God in unity. It's also this diagram here. I remember some years ago, I was with Murshid Wali Ali and Pir Shabda, and they said, wanted me to work very hard, and we looked at several examples of how to make, because that was one of the main practices that Murshid Sam gave, was the dot in the circle on the breath. And he gave it with the Darud, toward the one united with all, toward the one united with all, breathing in toward the one center of consciousness united with all, collection of variety bodies, and toward the one united with all. But you could also do it the opposite. Breathing out toward the one, and then in united with all. So there's different ways you can work with that practice. That's just a sidebar. But to give you an idea, again, you can look it up in the Gathas. On the dot in the circle is the body of teachings that Hazrat Anayat Khan gave. There was a reason for that. And if we look again at mandalas, there's always the concentric areas of the mandala that begins with the body, the mind, thoughts, and then the essence. There's usually four of them that come into the center, which is where the deity resides, at the center of the mandala. So our deity is our consciousness, but that consciousness is no other than the pure consciousness of God. That's the center of the mandala. So think about that. Also, if you're familiar with yantras, Hindu, Vedic tradition, you'll see those same things. There's always the dot, and everything emerges out of that. Those are geometric representations. There are whole cities that are built upon that. Washington, D.C. is one of them, the epicenter being the White House and all the streets fanning out from that. Rome is similar to that. There's a lot of places, Mexico City, again. So this kind of ideal we see manifest in material realms, but it's also here Murshid's giving it to. It's the cosmology of our being. So you may reflect upon these images, and really if you get very good, you'll be able to close your eyes and see them inwardly. Now that's part of the practice, is to being able to retain something. And if we can do that, then we can start to retain our practices ongoing in the consciousness all the time. They're there. They're all pervading. But here we reflect. And let us remember to concentrate on the light. Concentrate on light. Think about how light is always used. In every sacred service, the light is used. In Sufism, the Chiraghs are called the light bearers. In seeking to have this connection to this divine light within and in all of existence, it's all dancing with light, tuning to that vibration. Again, this light is within us, and I think we're always searching to reconnect with this light. Living here at the beach, it's kind of remarkable. You see people from all walks of life, different countries, different shapes people. Different orientations. And when that sun starts to arise over the horizon here, everyone turns towards it and they stand perfectly still. It's as if humanity has paused for a moment to look at that light. It's like a prayer. People maybe don't even call it that, but they're so taken, you know, with that, the beauty of that light presenting itself over the horizon, to see this whole range of people stilled by it, just standing perfectly still. watching it. It's just a beautiful sight. Letting that light penetrate. Feeling the light deeply within us. Illuminating. There's a one of the lines in the Gayan. I've lost the names of the books, the read together. There's a book that contains the Gayan, the Nirtan, and the Vardhan, but there's like, thy light has illuminated the dark chambers of my mind. Or, thy light is in all forms. There's many, many lines. Earth should focus so much on light and love. So one has to ask ourselves, perhaps this is the essence of the whole spiritual journey, this searching to reconnect and to recognize that great light within and without. And I mentioned the elements earlier, or Mersha did in the teachings, but this is the essence of the purification practices through the elements, is that we're sloughing off, we're polishing every aspect of our being through the elements, so that that great light shines out. It's like the great namaste. The light within me recognizes the light in you. Or the great nor. We talked last year when discussing this subject about this sense of longing sometimes we have, this sense of nostalgia, and sometimes we don't even know what it is that we're longing for, and we're lucky because we have the path, but of all those that haven't been acquainted with some sort of path that's touched their hearts, people look for it. You know, there's that song, looking for love in all the wrong places. Well, light too. It might be a new car, it might be a new man, it might be a new woman, it might be a new animal, it might be a new car, it might be a new place to live, it might be a new location. No, it's here. That's where it ultimately is. So we want to look for love and light in all the right places. So what we're doing is seeking a pathway. A pathway that can draw us into this aura, this essence, this halo that is known as the throne of God, the light upon lights. And when we do this, we come in contact with the knowledge and the feeling that we're indeed part of this great being of light. And that great being of light is also us. We feel that union. It's as Mersha, the quote I read in the beginning from the Bowl of Saki, love brought us from the world of unity to that of variety. And the same force can take us back again to the world of unity from the world of variety. And I think if we concentrate deeply on this, we can't ever be afraid of dissolving completely, even to death of the body, because we know that's where we're returning. In Buddhist practices, we work with this a lot, bringing that consciousness in and trying to be aware of how we can also project it out at that moment of death. So this isn't things to just be mildly interested about. These are things to take deeply in your being and use them and feel them and know the truth of them and apply them. the most amazing, magical, mystical gifts that we could ever receive. And Murshid and all the great traditions have given them to us. Extraordinary. It's just as if all we need to do is take it, put it in that magic lock, and unlock the mysteries of the universe, the mysteries of ourselves. To thine own self be true. So over these months we've worked with, and I've continued to work with it, I don't know about you, this practice, Noor Alanwar, and we talked about that. It's like we're taking this great sky net and casting it out and gathering the light of the universe and drawing it back into ourselves. And we can even do it as an exchange, like Tong Glin, drawing the light in and letting the light go out. Or the practice that Murshid gave to us. I inhale divine light and life, and I radiate divine life and light. There it is. He's given it to us. It's a form of Tong Glin. He didn't call it that, but that's it. And we do it with our breath practices in those five cycles. In the nose, out the nose. In the nose, out the mouth. In the mouth, out the nose. In the nose, in the mouth, out the nose. Did I already do that one? And in the mouth, out the mouth, and then again, returning to in the nose, out the nose. That's a kind of Tong Glin. I'm drawing it in, and I'm giving it back again. And that's what we're talking about too. So do, if nothing else, do that practice every day. The best. And if anyone needs that practice again, let me know. I can publish it also on our Gemma Note to Self, the passage from Murshid's teachings on the storeroom, and also the practice of the purification breaths as given by Murshid and Icon. I also am thinking about that wonderful practice that Murshid and Icon gave to us as the closure to the Nayaz when we do it on the breath. I come from the perfect source and I am bound to the perfect goal. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. We live, move, and have our being in God, and nothing of the past can touch us. We rise above all. That is a renewal right there. It's a new day. It's a new baptism. We are cleansed with that prayer. It's so beautiful. So again, the practice that I'm trying to get to is Noor Alanwar. And it's that practice that can connect us with the whole light of the whole universe. Okay. Let's do this 11 times aloud, 11 times on the whisper, and 11 times silently. And we can kind of tone it. I'm going to stop. Oh no, I'll leave the screen up because if you want to look at that while we're doing the practice, it's good. Noor Alanwar. 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 Noor, luminous, light, self, self-awakening, self-realizing, self-illuminating light. Anwar is the collection of lights, the light upon lights, the light upon lights, the lights that illuminate the throne of God. Noor Alanwar. Noor Alanwar. Noor Alanwar. Noor Alanwar. And now we whisper. Noor Alanwar. I'm breathing in and out. In, out, Anwar. Now on the breath, breathe in Nur al-Anwar and out Nur al-Anwar. Nur al-Anwar. I'd like to close with the prayer Khatun. I will keep the window open so we can have some conversation, question and answers. Any thoughts about future upcoming classes or things people would like to dive deeper into. Before we close with the Khatum, just the public service announcement of helping keep the Zoom alive, the websites alive, and so forth. You know, any donation is always appreciated. And some of you are so on top of it. The minute I put that up, you are out there donating. So thank you already for those that have done that. Again, through my own PayPal is also one, a link. And also through our website, sufi-message.org. Facebook. I have a Facebook link out there too, so that's another way. And through that, we get 100% of what you've given, as opposed to I think something 3% is taken through PayPal. I think I had a question here, so I'm gonna look just a moment. Maybe get that on the recording too. Sorry. No, Nur. It's Nur, N-U-R. Al, A-L, Anwar, A-N-W-A-R. Again, Nur, we've worked with that practice. You know what that means, divine light, the light that emanates from within, that's self-revelatory. Divine light, basically. Anwar is this collection of lights. And in some of the mystical text, Suwardi is one of them that comes to mind, and it's about the seven realms of light. Sufis talk about that. He talks about wrapping himself in the light of the universe. So it's this collection of light that that pervades the whole universe. It's the light of everything, seen and unseen. The practice was given to me by Murshida Vera at a time when I had a forlorning, I guess you could say. I was in a deeply transformative process, a process of gestation. It was not an easy process for me. I guess that would be called a dark night of the soul. And for me, it lasted 8 years. It wasn't an easy journey. But I knew there was literally light at the end of the tunnel. And I didn't, it felt like I didn't belong here. It felt like I was from someplace else, that I needed to return to that place. And I remember Murshida Vera asking me, do you feel suicidal? I said, no, not at all. That's not at all. Like, I'm not trying to escape, but I was looking for that connection. I keep trying to put it in words in these classes. I'm not sure if I'm doing it very effectively, but so I'll speak from this personal point of view. But she said, I want you to do this practice. And as you say these words, it's as if you're reaching out and the light within you is touching the light in the whole universe and coming back into you again. And you will feel that interconnectedness. Again, a word that's used by the Buddhist, interconnectedness of all things. Things don't exist in isolation, nor do we. We find that interconnectedness. More clarity on Anwar. Whoever wrote that, ask me if that's more clear to you now. Okay, and I see you couldn't see the stupa, but then we got to that. Can someone let me know? Noriko B, are you still there? Is it clear to you? Is it clear to other people? Thumbs up, shake your head. Yes, thank you. I'm so glad. Thank you. Please always ask me and my co-host if there's a, you know, I get real involved. Sometimes I don't even see everything real clearly. So you have to be my eyes and ears. If something's out there, you can interrupt me when it seems like a good point to do so and say you have a question and I will be happy to answer it. I'm so grateful that you've asked that question and I hope that was helpful to you. So when you feel like you're alone or you don't belong here or you're longing for something, this is a good practice to make you feel connected. Connected. And of course, this is the fuel Murship was talking about. We learn to gather that light. That's what Neural Anwar does. It gathers the light.
Gathers the light. Nuria, excuse me, dear. I needed to step out of the room just as you were describing that, and I got part of it. And I'm not sure about the Anwar.
Who's speaking?
Harriet. It's Harriet Sabura.
Okay,
Harriet.
Yes,
sorry.
Thank you. Ask me the question again.
I understood the overall of your description, and you said some amazing things. The mm-hmm. Anwar part of Nur al-Anwar. I'm not quite sure.
It literally means in the short capsulated, it means, so Nur means luminous. And
yes,
Anwar means the collection of lights. So the light upon lights that the Sufis talk about.
Thank you.
All realms of vibration. You know, it's like the Abundama Shamaya, you know, that exists in all realms of light and vibration. So that's spoken to in many traditions. So that's what it is, the collection of lights. Okay? Thank you for asking.
Okay. Beloved Murshida, could you also repeat the I come from a perfect source and maybe include it in your mailing?
Yes, and maybe, again, Gemma, could you take these notes for me, please? Or Shams, you could do it too and send them to me. So that practice is given with movements, and I've done it before, but I'll do it here. It's usually done at the end of the Nyas, which is given by Murshid. And when we do the purification breaths, as they were given by Hazaret and Ayat Khan, which are different than the healing breaths, although the breath pattern is exactly the same, at the very end, when we're returning to what in the elemental breaths we would call the etheric breath, Murshid gives that breath in the nose and out the nose using the Nyas. I'm going to step back and then I'll come to this practice. So it's breathing in, beloved Lord Almighty God, and out through the rays of the sun, and in through the waves of the air, and out through the all-pervading life and space, and in, purify me and revivify me, hold the breath, and I pray, and then breathe out, heal my body, heart, and soul. After that, he gives another prayer and practice, and this is how it goes. I'm going to scoot back so you can see more of my body. Okay, so you take your arms out. Murshida Vira gave this one time at camp, and I clung to this practice too. So it's this way. You take your arms out. I come from the perfect source, and I am bound to the perfect goal. Your hands are clasped like this. We are now the stupa. Get it? Okay, so I'm going to do it again with the words. I come, and it's done on the breath. So you can, I'll try to give you the instructions, and you can breathe in and out. So breathing in. I come from the perfect source and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold your breath. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. Now this way, I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. The hands go like this. I rise above all. I don't know if you can see that. I'll put this down a little bit. They're like this. And Murshid gives this gesture that he actually gives a lot as he takes the Amin from when we do our prayers, he raises it from the solar plexus area over the head and then out. And he says about that gesture. That gesture where the hands are going out like that, that we should think of ourselves as a bird about to take flight into the center of God, the heart of God. So you think about that. These things are not, oh my God, the beautiful teachings he's given with the gestures of the prayers with elaborate commentary. We do this, but there's a whole esoteric underlying teaching to all of that. And this gesture is very beautiful. And he's given that as, oh, me. But here it's, I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. It's almost as if the clouds of doubt and fear are scattered by that piercing glance, and we emerge like Mount Fuji that was in clouds, and they clear away, and we emerge out of that. There's all kinds of amazing metaphors that could be used, but it's a beautiful prayer, and he actually gives it at the end of the purification breaths, which are not the, you know, it's different than the, I know these words get mixed up in different traditions, and it's perfectly okay. It's different transmissions through different esoteric lineages. There's no criticism, but the way Murshid and I Khan gave it is slightly different than it often gets transmitted. And to tell you the truth, that's one of the reasons that when I met Murshid Hidayat, I ran as quickly as I could. I ran, because I wanted to know. I wanted to be at the headwaters of the Ganges. I wanted to be at the headwaters of Hazrat Anayat Khan's teachings. I did not want to hear. Of course, you know, you've seen me at all these camps. I do these jamiats and retreats with other spiritual paths. I've studied. But I wanted to know what Murshid himself said. And, you know, I'm so fortunate to have been entrusted with these teachings and these papers. You know, that was a big part of this journey for me, at least. So I have things. If you have questions, I don't know if I have the answers myself, but I can find them because Murshid Hidayat was so gracious. You know, every time I'd see him, he'd go, bring your computer, get your computer. And he'd just put his... He'd link his computer into mine and download all that stuff, those papers. It's a treasure trove. And of course, that treasure trove is available to most of us. If you go to our own website, sufi-message.org, and go to links, the Nechbach Foundation, amazing. So many things available online. It's still active. They're working with the archives. The teachings are available. And Kahira, who's an email friend of mine, at least we know each other, she will often, if she can, answer questions. And she's done research for me because I've had things that they seem like there's a little hole somewhere, and she goes back into the archives. So if there's something you need, I can find that out for you. Use me as a resource. I'm here. Please. That's my purpose in life, is to help transmit these teachings. Just as simple as that. So I'm here for you, okay? And if I can help you, I will do it in any way I can. Is that? I get real passionate. I'm not angry, I'm passionate. Go ahead, who was asking a question?
That was so beautiful, this motion with hands. Could we repeat it once more? It was.
Of course. So it goes like this. You're standing. You could do it sitting. You could do it lying in the bed if you're not feeling well. In fact, Murshid always said, even the purification breaths can be done. All of that can be done while lying down. And here's another piece for everyone. Nuri Kolbe and Hayat, I know you're dealing with partners that are needing some extra oomph. You don't have to tell anybody you're doing anything for anybody. You offer those practices, you do your practice, and you offer them for the wellness and strength and healing of whoever it is in your family that may need it, period, the end. It's different than the healing ceremony. Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. So my arms are at down and out. I'm raising them up. I'm actually putting my palms upward as I raise them, like this. But I would do the gesture larger, but I'll do it smaller so you can see it. I come from the perfect source and I am bound to the perfect goal. Hold your breath. The light of the perfect being is kindled in my soul. I live, move, and have my being in God, and nothing of the past or present can touch me. I rise above all. And the arms are slightly out, straight, not forced, and the hands have this gesture, like a bird. You know when you see, especially the little baby birds, oh my God, they're so cute. Have you noticed how they do this? They get their little feathers going like, I'm going to go back. They go like this with their little wings, getting ready to fly. That's what we're doing. And that gesture is like that. And Mercia talks about that, that you make that gesture. And these are your wings. I mean, my God, come on. Heart and wings. There it is. Right? These are our wings. So we're getting ready to take flight. Did that help? I wasn't sure who asked that question. Who was that beautiful voice? Is that
Fatima? That was Ella. Ella.
Ella. Okay. Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Noria, would you give that email address again for the source information?
Okay. Can you, if you go to our website, ours being sufi-message.org, and click on links. Can someone, Gemma, can you go grab that for us? Are you able to do that and put it in the chat for people? You know where it is.
Yeah, I don't have the chat feature for some reason.
Okay.
I can actually put it on the screen if you want.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know how that works, but I will be, can, who's?
Oh, I might be able to do it. Let me check. I just, for some reason it came up now. Let's see.
Okay, I've got it.
You got it?
Yep.
Yep.
And let me tell you, when you go there, take advantage. There are, and Gemma, you can continue to do that for the benefit of everybody, if you can, if you will. You just click on the chat and then you put it in the text. It says type message here. You can open, it may just open up when you click on chat. Anyway, here's the thing. There is, you have to navigate through. They've changed. They've been updating their website, but there's a place that says downloads or publications. Go there. And all of those very some people you'll hear them called things, the orange message volumes or the brown books. The brown books are archives from the very beginning of Murshid's teachings through the end when his demise. They've put them in a chronological order and they've listed where that was given to what audience, what country, state, you know, whatever, who was the person that was taking the shorthand. It's amazing. And they have those, they have what's called Complete Sayings, Volume 1 and 2. So they're short sayings, but then they have the teachings in a chronological order. And the orange message volumes were the effort of, I don't know, Amina, you can also correct me if I'm wrong with this, or Mudita, I know you're there, but I believe that that was the efforts of the Dutch, the Sufi movement, actually, who then categorized them. They tried to look through all those teachings and found them in categories. They weren't necessarily given in that way. Some of them were. There were some early on books that were published, but that's how they found their ways into those volumes. But the original teachings with kind of the original language, including footnotes, are in those brown volumes, and they're downloadable free for as PDFs. Sign up for their mail list, because they also send links to new things that they've published or available. They have a wonderful newsletter, and I mean, it's just a treasure trove of information. So
thank you.
Feed yourself that way. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions?
Halima here. I'm wondering, where would intuition fall within those circles? Consciousness, soul, heart, mind, body. Intuition.
What do you think? Halima, where do you think it is?
Between soul and heart.
I don't know. Others? That's a good question.
I think it's the express train right on through from the out, you know, from the outside right into the center.
That would be my answer, from the inside out and the outside in. The tricky thing is we have to know what is our intuition and what is a projection that's coming outside of ourselves, or something that's in that warehouse that gets kind of aberrant, you know, like the glass isn't quite clear and we think that it's one thing. You know, it depends on how much you can rely on your intuition, I guess, or how much it's been accurate for you. If I'm in question, I always watch my breath. That was one of the great teachings I learned from Saul Bardowski, the head of the Dervish Healing Order. He talked about that, about the observation of the breath. Meaning, ask yourself a question, observe the breath. Is it in the left nostril? It often is a no, or wait, or not yet, you know, whatever that thing is. Should I eat this? Is this good for me? Touch it or think about it, breathe. See where the breath is and make a decision based on that. So this would be the negative side, or the reserve side, or the wait side, the left side. The right side would be positive, go ahead, you know. You're about to make a business call and you're not really sure if the person's going to be receptive. Should I make that call now or should I wait? You wait, you just watch the breath. It'll give you an indication. Now, Saul said it, that he used it in everyday mundane things to train himself. So he'd say, should I wear the pink shirt or should I wear the blue shirt? And he'd watch his breath. You know, what was in harmony with him for that day. So if you do that, you can train your intuition. You can draw upon things in that way. But I think intuition's an all-pervading thing. And here's the thing, anyone that has the power of intuition, some people see, some people hear, some people smell, some people, you know, there are different ways that we get that information. It's really hard to say, and it may be coming through one of those elements, we could even say, you know. And we definitely have some intuitives amongst us in this class. I don't know if any of them want to reveal themselves or talk about it at all, but I know that some people just hear something, or there's a knowing that arises that they speak, or they see something, you know, and they get their information. But different people get information different ways. Am I skirting the subject, Halima, or have I helped you at all? Halima, wasn't that you that asked that question? Are you still there?
It was, and thank you so much. It definitely helps. Again, that going within and focusing on the breath, that our bodies give us, you know, are connected. We're so connected. Yeah.
Right. Thank you. That's right. I mean, some people use the I Ching, you know, some people toss coins, different things that work for different people. Some people use pendulums, you know, crystals. I think that's all a matter of training to see, you know, to feel, to know what methodology or what works for you. And I'm sure, Murshid, if you go into the, again, another, can someone of you type this in, Kareem, not Kareem, I'm looking at Kareem's name. So glad you're there. Kareem, thank you. Shamsuddin or Gemma, can you type in the website Hazarat-Anayat-Khan.org for everybody to cut and paste? Very important. It's a database that was created by our friend Peron Baer. He was the head of the esoteric school for Pir Vilayat. Now he's created his own school based on the teachings of Anayat Khan. But he's also quite brilliant in finance and in databases. And so he created this database that is very thorough and comprehensive on the teachings. And they're in the organized in the way of the Orange Message volumes. But if you type in Halima intuition, you'll find all the places Mersha talks about intuition. And you can study for yourself. I do a lot of studying in that database. And for other people too. Yes, and yes, thank you. You can sign in as a guest. You can also sign in. If you sign up, there's no charge or anything. It's a free service. They'll ask you what organization affiliation you have. I don't know. Maybe it has even no affiliation. I don't know. But whatever you feel your attunement to. And So that's all out there. And for those of you that have more advanced initiations, if you want to sign up and you want to contact me, I can contact Peron myself, because there's hidden teachings that not the public, you know, there's those esoteric teachings that aren't available to the public. They're available as one progresses along the initiatic path, and I can have those made more available to you. So I'll tell you what, I'm connected. You can use me as a resource. I'm happy to be of service. Again, that's my purpose, so however it can help. Anything else?
Rashida Nuria, I wanted to share with everyone, earlier I painted this, and we were talking about you could check into the senses. And so I thought this was pretty much right in tune. Lose your mind and come to your senses.
Perfect.
Is that backwards? It seems
no, it's not. It's perfect.
Is it? Yeah, lose your mind and come to your senses.
I like that. Very good. That's wonderful. Very pithy, and it's good. Thank you for sharing that, Mudita. Sheka Mudita. So polite. Thank you. Well, I didn't get to the Khatum yet. I might have to edit this video, but it's been a wonderful conversation. Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. O thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. When I make this gesture, I think about every teacher that gave me a blessing and did it in that way, and then moved their hands. And I let that blessing be repeated again and again when I say and close my prayers. Try it. Think about that. Bring that into your awareness. Feel the blessings of all your teachers upon you. Love you all. Until the next time. Be well.